Chair Escada?
Here.
Vice Chair Boylan? Regent Batista?
Here.
Regent Brown?
Present.
Regent Goicoechea?
Present.
You do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Lipson. If we can begin the meeting by starting off with public comment. Let's start off with public comment at GBC. Is there any public comment at Great Basin College?
There is none at this time.
And there is none present here in Reno? Is there any public comment in Las Vegas? Or Henderson, excuse me.
Dr. Bill Robinson, pastor of the Unified Faculty Senate, and I was going to remind you that we were in Henderson, of course. You know why I'm here. There is now a report from the Metropolitan Police Department about what happened on my campus 14 months ago. I expected it to be on a Board of Regents agenda. I have not seen it. We really need to get Metro in here. I'm going to talk about this at the main board meeting because there's maybe things. Did you know there were actually two people who fired shots on our campus that day other than the shooter and... These are things we learned from reading the report. It wasn't just the people who were shooting at the shooter and the shooter. There was another person who shot a weapon on our campus that day. There's all kinds of things you need to know. There's all kinds of things you need to understand. Let me add to that, for example, also that we've been asking for security upgrades on campus for 25 years. That horrible day was a terrible reminder of the fact that we've been ignored for 25 years. The building I'm in, which is that building, had multiple times people have gone in there on weekends, opened a dozen doors, and stolen everything that's in those offices that can move. They never catch them. They never do anything to change the security. They just replace whatever's gone. I have marks on my door from the last time it was jimmied open. This is a problem that we've been trying to get somebody to do something about for 30 years. We have people who are afraid to go into restrooms first thing in the morning in some buildings on our campus because there will be people in there naked taking a bath, and the university should be responding to that, not by being mean, but by figuring out ways to help folks who are on our campus who need our help. And instead, we end up with confrontations in restrooms and UPD being called to the restroom. And we don't need that. We need a security plan for our campus that's meaningful, that we need noodle. We need, the electronic locks on our doors failed that day. Faculty could not lock their classrooms with an active shooter in the building. They couldn't lock their classrooms because the software failed. You got a demonstration about mechanical locks not that long ago. There is no plan on my campus to put in those mechanical locks, even though they were recommended by the system office. It's time. We have new leadership, who I like very much. Maybe it's time now with the new leadership to take, and hopefully this group will be behind that 1,000%, and we can maybe do some actual security planning on our campus. Thanks.
Good morning. I'm Doug Unger, D-O-U-G-U-N-G-E-R, professor at UNLV and also the chapter president of the Nevada Faculty Alliance there. I'd like to thank this committee for paying attention to campus safety and security in a way that hadn't been done in the past and making it a priority, and I hope that it should be a priority. I'm here to try to urge some urgency with addressing the campus safety and security issue, but I'm also here to ask the regents for some help. My main task for the Nevada Faculty Alliance this legislative session is to ask our legislators for safety funding for the Nevada system of higher education. We have to get our point across that the governor's recommended $11 million without base funding is not enough to cover the needs of our system. I've found that legislators are extremely receptive to my requests for them to honor safety funding requests for this upcoming budget in a way they may not be receptive to a lot of other NG requests. But we need some help, and I'm hoping you regents can phone the people you know, advocate for campus safety and security, because I think that should be a primary concern. Professor Robinson is right. Our campus does not feel secure. We don't have doors that lock from the inside. We don't feel like there's any overriding plan for training. I served on the ad hoc committee for safety and security that the chancellor impaneled, and I also have been working with the American Federation of Teachers nationally on preventing gun violence, presented to the White House Office for Gun Violence Prevention last October, and I've learned a lot. I think we can get a good, reasonable plan in place, we can get the funding in place, and we can begin to make some real changes on our campus that'll make all of us feel safe. I think that should be the number one priority of our budget requests for this legislative session. Thank you for your help. Please do all you can to help with getting that message to our policymakers and our legislators. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Deborah Arteaga, Deborah Arteaga. I am chair of the UNLV Faculty Senate and professor of linguistics. The morning of December 6th, 2023, I was teaching a beginning Spanish class reviewing for our final. Most of my students were freshmen, 18 or 19. In the middle of the class, even though it wasn't allowed, my students started reading their text messages. These said that there was an active shooter. We were told to run, hide, or fight. I decided that we needed to hide. We did not have a panic button or emergency phone. We cannot lock the classrooms from the inside. I turned out the lights and we sat waiting. I went from table to table, making sure they're all right. Some wanted hugs and several were crying. These were children. They had never even considered their parents' death, let alone their own. Students were texting their family and friends. We sat in the room for 4 hours before we were escorted out. My students were not okay. They're still not okay after that experience. I still keep in touch with them. As the day went on, in my own department, World Languages and Cultures, colleagues were checking in. No one had heard from Japanese professor Dr. Naoko Takemaru, a dear friend and colleague. As it turned out, she had been murdered. I'm telling you this story to beg you to help us allot as much money as possible for security. Thank you.
Good morning, Teresa Marie for the record, UNLV GPSA student body president. And I wanted to also talk about December 6th and something that came up as a graduate and professional student. At the time, I was the treasurer, and now I'm the president. And one of the things that I really wanted to work towards stepping into my position was working with UPD to have a training on what we do as GAs. So I'm also a graduate assistant, and many of us experienced, what do we do if we're teaching a class? How do we support them? We didn't have any training on that. And I reached out to UPD, and I worked with them, and they gave us a training. But I also recently sat in on a meeting in regard to our response. And one of the things that was brought up in discussing how our faculty, how our teaching assistants supposed to respond and support their students is people don't think about that role. They think about run, hide, fight. But if you have 30, 18-year-olds in a room, I'm not going to look at my students and go, good luck, and run. Because we did have faculty that did that on our campus, who left students in a panic to fend for themselves. And I had GAs who said they would never do that to their students and they wanted training. So I think that's also something we need to look at system-wide. How do we train our faculty and our teaching assistants and our graduate students how to address these situations when they are in a position of authority and taking into their own hands other students' lives when they're making those decisions? Thank you.
Thank you. I was remiss not to initiate the online calls. So members of the public may attend the meeting and provide public comment or testimony at these sites, both GBC, UNR, and Henderson. but public comment may also be offered via telephone by calling 669-444-9171 and entering meeting ID 933-5568-7402 and password 555-555, or by completing and submitting the online public comment form from the online INCHI website. Written comments will no longer be read into the record, but will also be included in the permanent meeting record. So thank you very much. So we're going to move on to Chair's report.
Chair Escada, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yes, ma'am.
We just need to ask SCS if there's any callers online for public comment.
Ms. Lipson, thank you for keeping me on cue. Are there any public comments online?
No callers at this time.
Thank you very much. And once again, thank you, Ms. Lipson. So one of the items, while reviewing the Chair's report, one of the items I was looking at were the charges and responsibilities of this Security Committee. And one of the five distinct responsibilities are placed upon this committee. In the Board of Regents Handbook, under Title I, Chapter 1, Article 6, Section 3, Subsection H, as in hotel, which is on page 17, as written in policy, this committee has the responsibilities and duties to assure five specific aspects are followed by policy. The Security Committee shall, as I state, study issues and policies to maintain a secure environment where students, faculty, staff, and visitors may safely live, learn, and work. Number two, review policies, procedures, and best practices concerning campus safety, homeland security, and cybersecurity issues. Number three, monitor campus safety issues and receive quarterly reports and updates from all institutions on campus crime statistics. Ensure institutions develop a periodically update emergency response plans and make policy recommendations to the entire board intended to provide safe and secure environment for all students, faculty, staff, and the public on all campuses and offices in the Nevada System of Higher Education. These five have not been addressed in quite a while. These five will be addressed while I sit as chair of the Securities Committee for the next year. I firmly believe recognition is warranted in regards to the attention of these five items, and that we'll be addressing them throughout this next calendar year. But in the meantime, that concludes my chair's report, and more will be filtering down to each campus as we proceed over the year. So we're going to transition over to agenda item number four, which is going to be the INCHI command.
Regent Arascata,
yes, sir.
I apologize. I think we skipped number two, the minutes. That was an action item.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate it. I'm kind of running through this pretty quick. Agenda item number two, it is for possible action, and it is the minutes from the previous quarterly meeting on September 5th, 2024. Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
All right. You beat me to it. I'll second it.
Thank you, Regent Brown, for the motion. Regent Boylan, thank you for the second. May I have a roll call? Excuse me. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Nielsen, for keeping me on cue. We're going to transition over to number four, agenda item number four, which is the INCHI Southern Command report from Arnold Vasquez, who is the Director of University Police Services Southern Command, who's going to present the Southern Command's 2024 annual activity report. Officer Vasquez?
Can you hear? Okay, good. We're on. Okay, well, For the record, Arnold Vasquez, Chief of University Police Department, Southern Command. Good morning, Chair Escada, Vice Chair Boylan, and committee members. I will be providing an update of the department's statistics and activities for the calendar year 2024 and an overview of the 2024 annual security reports for College of Southern Nevada, Nevada State University, and UNLV. The annual security reports include crime statistics for the calendar years 2023, 2022, and 2021 at these respective campuses. As required by law, these reports have been submitted to the Department of Education and are included in your supplemental report materials for your review. As a general overview of activity for the 2024 calendar year, the department generated over 43,000 computer-aided dispatch events. These include any and all officer activity. Of the total activity, officers initiated over 37,000 of the events, which we have notated here as officer-initiated activity. Officer-initiated activity includes traffic stops, self-initiated field contacts, building checks, foot patrols, bike patrols, community outreach, administrative tasks, etc. We received over 6,400 calls for service, which are calls our dispatch center fielded from the public and dispatched officers to those calls. As a result, approximately 1,900 reports were generated, which included just over 1,600 criminal reports. This slide illustrates the comparison of activity from the 2023 and 2024 calendar years. The department increased officer-initiated activity, as I mentioned, as the year progressed, which accounted for approximately an 11% increase year over year. This increased officer-initiated activity likely contributed to a reduction in the total number of calls for service, as we believe, and we believe, had a direct impact on some crime statistics, which are captured in the next slide. In addition, during the final quarter of the year, we developed a short-term strategic plan, which included the creation of our Community Outreach and Problem-Solving Unit, or COPS Unit. The COPS Unit is a cornerstone of our community outreach, but also focuses on problem-solving in the form of identifying crime trends and executing crime-fighting strategies in tandem with our detective bureau. From 2023 to 2024, the department continued to see general volatility in several areas of note. As you can see, we saw an increase in fraud cases, which was primarily related to online student aid fraudulent activity. The increase in vandalism, as noted here, has been assigned to our COPS unit to work in tandem with our detective bureau, as I mentioned, to identify a crime-fighting strategy to address those. From year to year, we saw an increase that nearly doubled in vandalism activity, and so we are putting resources directly toward that. Theft remained the same at 267, but we have directed some efforts in that area as well. A lot of those thefts are primarily focused on scooter thefts and bicycle thefts on campuses, and we have deployed a few different strategies to try to address that. Some have yielded some information that has led us in the right direction, but we're still working on that piece. From our officer-initiated activity and our COPS impact, information reports saw a 16% increase from 346 to 403. In addition, the number of trespass violations increased from 177 to 202. Which is a 14% increase. And there is also an increase of weapons violations on campus, which were doubled. What I will add is that many of these cases or violations are the direct result of officer-initiated field contacts. So the proactivity with the officers out in the field, being involved and engaged in the community, being visible and making those proactive contacts generally yields these type of crime statistics that we see. So the intent here is... In other words, you know, with more productivity coupled with the implementation of our newly formed COPS unit, we expect to see initially a spike in these statistical areas, However, the increased officer presence, community engagement, and crime-fighting strategies, the expectation to see these drop over time. Over the last year, the department has hired over 25 personnel to our team. This includes 9 police officers, 3 dispatchers, and 5 community service officers, 2 student cadets, and 5 non-sworn and administrative personnel, and 2 threat assessment and emergency management personnel. I'm happy to report that we have moved forward with 2 additional newly created positions, a grant coordinator, and property and evidence technician. This leaves us with only 2 vacancies on the non-sworn side, an IT tech position, and a dispatcher. In addition, we continue to strengthen our department structure as one of our strategic objectives, focusing on retaining current staff and backfilling all units within the department. None of this would have been possible without the tireless efforts of our hiring and recruitment team and our collaborative efforts with our in-house senior human resources business partner. Some recruitment in action. To highlight some of our recruitment efforts, we still see 20 vacancies in our sworn ranks. So we are pushing very hard to try and get some of those filled, and I'm very optimistic that we'll be very close to that by the end of the year, and I'll share a little bit with you. The department has participated in 9 career fairs over 2024. As I mentioned, we're hopeful that our recruitment efforts, including leveraging the approved critical labor shortage designation, which I brought to you for approval in January of this year, yields and fills some of those gaps. I currently expect to be able to extend 2 offers of employment in the next week and an additional 5 closely behind that as their backgrounds have been completed and they have been forwarded to me for review. So within the next 2 weeks or so, we might have an additional 7 bodies in the field. So that cuts into that 20 number. In addition, we remain committed to the 30 by 30 pledge. The 30 by 30 pledge is an initiative to promote women in law enforcement with a goal of reaching 30% of a department's police recruits by the year 2030. Currently, 15% of our 45 total sworn positions are female and represented at all ranks within our department. The Southern Desert Regional Police Academy continues to operate under the leadership of the College of Southern Nevada with partners across the Las Vegas Valley. Some of them you can see on the slide here. In class, there were 2 cohorts in 2024, which were class 2401 and class 2402. 2401 graduated 17 recruits, 2 of which were University Police Department police recruits. Those recruits have since successfully completed an additional 4-month field training program in late December of 2024 and are solo beat officers today. Class 2402 graduated 20 recruits, 4 of which were UPD recruits, all of whom are currently in their second phase of field training, so the second month of their field training, and they are expected to be solo beat officers by mid to late May. Our community engagement. In 2024, the University Police Department actively participated in 116 community events, fostering stronger relationships with students, faculty, and staff. Engagement initiatives included career days, take your kid to work day, early outreach, day camps, career fairs, and student escorts, providing mentorship and support to students of all ages. Officers took part in resource tabling events and campus-wide activities, including holiday celebrations, student life, sports tournaments, and campus safety presentations. Strengthening connections through interactive programs such as Donuts with Dogs, Donuts with a Cop, I guess there's a theme there, Coffee with a Cop, who doesn't love donuts? Coffee with a Cop and podcasts. We've also encouraged that open dialogue and community trust. We've also participated in homecoming weeks, commencement ceremonies, summits, and much, much more to really ensure that visibility and build that community trust within our campuses. In addition to the engagement that I just mentioned, as a part of continuing objective of the department, members of the department have increased training and presentations throughout our community. In 2024, we had 48 general safety presentations, 55 active assailant trainings, and 13 emergency preparedness and other presentations. Our COPS unit is the primary unit within our department leading these community outreach and education events. The unit is currently exploring various training platforms to increase the reach of these events. We want to try and see if we can expand on that and make it more accessible to folks. And as you heard earlier, we want to make sure that we touch as many people as we can. UPT training, this is primarily what we annually are required to do by Nevada Post. These are some of the training modules that are required that we successfully complete in order to maintain our Police Officer 1 Category 1 status. These training modules are delivered in a combination of online, in-person, and practical training sessions. The one that I would like to highlight there is our MACTAC training. I think I brought this up at a previous presentation, but MACTAC is Multi-Assault Counterterrorism and Action Capabilities. And what that is essentially a team that can respond at a moment's notice to a critical incident, not just within our department, but collaborate and line up with other department entities throughout the valley to address that critical incident in an expedited fashion. We have built out and expanded our training cadre so we can actually continue more trainings on a regular basis within our department. So the hope is that we accomplish that within this year. As a part of our strategic plan, I wanted to highlight continued development of our workforce. There were three important areas that I'd like to highlight. One of them was mobile field force training with other local law enforcement partners. This was really on the forefront of our minds as we approach the election season with protests and the level of activity that we saw in and around our campuses. So we wanted to make sure that we had a mobile field force that aligned with other agencies to be able to address crowd control issues or civil unrest. Human resources staff development plan. What we have with this is we've established one-on-one meetings with each individual member of the department with the chief and our HR department to identify individual and professional goals. And as I mentioned, this is not just for sworn staff. This is for all staff at the department. The intent is to design a professional development training module, promote a strong succession plan within the organization. In addition, peer support and wellness. That is a very important piece in our profession. And especially over the last year, with the events that we've encountered not only on our campus, but throughout the valley. And most recently, our peer support and wellness team has been built out to include one of our comfort dogs, Finn. And we recently supported one of our lost colleagues from North Las Vegas Police Department and received a tremendous amount of thanks for that. The department continues to work on several grant awards, including the Joining Forces program. The Joining Forces program is a Office of Traffic Safety grant, which brings all regional local law enforcement partners together, working to eliminate impaired driving, improve pedestrian safety, and things of that nature. UPD participated in 12 events, three of which were focused on traffic safety within our jurisdictional areas. We also continue to work with our Western Region De-Escalation Training Program. This department administers the de-escalation training program for law enforcement agencies throughout the Western United States. A large thank you goes out to our training coordinator, retired Chief Bob Navarez, for his continued hard work. Today, he has reached officers somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 officers. Active officers across the states of Nevada, California, Oregon, Washington, and in a few weeks, Hawaii. One area that I'd like to bring up on that is that de-escalation training is primarily focused on law enforcement or sworn. We recently collaborated with Chief Navarez to build out a civilian module, so we can expect to see that civilian module being trained out to all of our institutions with faculty and staff so they can have that added training in their resume. And the last one I'd like to mention here, and I know I'm running long on time here, Targeted Violence and Terrorism Prevention Grant Program. This is a grant that was received through ENSHE, and there's ongoing work to protect students, faculty, staff, and visitors. This came as a part of the Chancellor's Ad Hoc Committee on Public Safety, and that grant supports increased awareness and strengthening of institutional behavioral threat management teams. I know that many throughout ENSHE are working on this. Thank you to all of them, including Dr. Louise Hardy from our Threat Assessment and Emergency Management team, and Amanda Wins from UNR Emergency Management. Okay, I'd like to highlight a few departmental highlights. As I mentioned, we developed a 24-25 strategic plan, and one of the primary goals or one of the pillars is to develop community outreach programs, and as I mentioned, that came in the form of our COPS unit. The second goal or objective was to increase our hiring, recruit and continue to retain our officers and our staff that we currently have. Goal three was a staff development and succession planning. And so some of the things that I mentioned already today have kind of lined up with that that strategic plan, and so we're really happy that we made some significant progress in that area. One thing I want to mention, too, is in November of 2024, we had a recognition ceremony, and I'd just like to mention to the committee that Medals of Honor and Valor were amongst the highest awards presented for acts of bravery and heroism during the tragic events on December 6th of 2023. I'll go through this quickly. Special events, we had a busy year when it came to special events. We supported several high-profile events over 2024, and that included a wide variety of events on Southern Command Nevada campuses, which totaled 196 for the year 2024. Some of the significant events included the success of the UNLV football team, Go Rebs, with over 1 million attendees at home games during that last season. Our community events included the annual NFR, or National Finals Rodeo, supporting the Super Bowl activities and general dignitary visits that we saw on campuses. I promise I'll get everybody out of here by 5 p.m. I'd like to highlight a few things for our canine updates. We have four canines, Astra, Leia, Macy, and Finn. I wish I had better pictures for you all next time, I promise. Astra, Leia, and Macy are primarily explosive detection dogs, and Finn is our support dog. Keeping special event facilities safe, the team conducted over 200 sweeps, assisting several regional partners throughout 2024. So it wasn't exclusive just to our campuses. We assisted with other agencies, and they do the same for us at times, too. Finn, our comfort canine, continues his hard work, averaging over 90 hours of outreach a month throughout our community. And with that brings me to our Cleary Annual Security Report. In accordance with Board Policy Title 4, Chapter 1, Section 12, included in supplemental materials are the 2024 Annual Security Reports for students serving institutions in Southern Nevada. And I'd like to actually backtrack on that and say that it's a correction. In the slide it says 2023, but it's actually the 2024 annual security report. That was a typo in the slide deck. I apologize. These reports were completed by the Southern Command team containing statistics for calendar year 2021 through 2023. The statistics were reported to the Department of Education in October of 2024 in accordance with the newly renamed Gene Cleary Campus Safety Act as of December of last year. Beyond the new name for the law, several changes are ongoing and new for the upcoming year. Our team continues to support the primary goal of the legislation to strengthen campus safety at all of our institutions through prevention, education, and community engagement. This concludes my report to the committee. Thank you for your time and your continued support. I'm available for any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Chief Vasquez. Let's go to the committee. Are there any questions from committee members at the E.E. Henderson campus?
Yes, sir.
And Chair, I'd like to Regent go next, Boylan. Please.
Oh, sorry. Somebody was saying something. Who's saying something? Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I appreciate it. Chief Vasquez, I love that. Chief, I love that sound of that. Great presentation, lots of information. I have two questions, actually. One is, how much have we worked, and when I say we, I mean you, the police, with the professors and the students that came here saying that they don't feel quite secure and safe. Have you had any breakthrough with them? Have you been able to convince them, or will you be setting up appointments with them to do something like that?
Arnold Vasquez, for the record. Thank you,
Boylan.
Vice Chair Boylan.
All right.
No
worries.
Thank you for the question. So I'm always open to having those discussions with anybody on campus and within our community, quite frankly. In relation to the sense of feeling safe or the issues that they have seen on campus, what I've mentioned here is that we are looking to really be much more proactive in terms of that engagement and training and providing just different tools for not only students but staff on campus and how they can react in this type of event. I'll tell you that I was also received the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department report, and there's a few things in there that I noticed that actually staff did extremely, extremely well. And I think that this was just not anything that might have been trained or might have seen in a slide deck. This was something that they just reacted to. And in my opinion, they acted in a very brave and heroic way. So to answer your question, yes, we are still very much pursuing many more ways to train and engage in that conversation and continue to work with the institutions on safety measures in that fashion.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you are, but maybe it's just a suggestion I can make here, Chair, to the professors who came forward and the student, that they reach out and have a meeting with the chief and his people. That might help a lot. It always helps if you go walk in somebody else's shoes, meet with them, or if you reach out to them specifically, especially Dr. Robinson. And you know Dr. Robinson, is he still here? My bald brother right there. You might even have been a professor of mine. I was an older student. I just remembered you from 4 years ago. But anyway, it's something that, you know, you might do is personally reach out and say, come here, let's have a cup of coffee. And we'll get the chancellor to pay for that because, you know, she's the chancellor. But I think it would be a good idea to help them feel a wee bit more comfy. Now, my second thing is... I wanted to talk about terrorism and such and what we're doing, but that we can talk some other time. Have we, and I may have missed it, because I see this young man, and did we honor him openly at a meeting? Did we give him a commendation? You may have given him a medal, I hope, for bravery and honor. Was he at any one of our meetings that I missed? And he's right there. He's feeling really embarrassed, but I had to do it. I love that guy. But did we do anything for him?
Arnold Vasquez, for the record. Yes, Regent Boylan, we actually did have an awards and recognition ceremony where we publicly recognized him and Detective Danny
yes.
Garcia.
Yes,
and
yes.
Him being Nathaniel Drama detective who ended that tragic event that day for
oh,
us.
Oh, yeah.
They were the two Medal of Honor recipients. There were an additional 8 Medal of Valor medals that were issued as well
for okay.
various acts within that particular event.
But it was at a board meeting, et cetera, right? Was it? Because I would like to see that in a main board meeting, such bravery, such above and beyond kind of stuff. We commend them for that.
Regent Boylan, this is Regent Brown. We actually did that in December of the year it happened. So two decembers ago, yeah. We did it at the very next meeting, yeah. And it's been acknowledged, and we said something last December at the one-year anniversary. So, yes, in our meetings we have.
Outstanding. Thank you so much. But I think it's such a great thing, we should do it more often so that our police and our students and faculty who might stand up. Because what I just heard from one student here, that there were certain facts, I think those guys or gals should be fired, whether they're competent or not, but if they were scared and they didn't stand by the students, that is disgraceful. I think that needs to be investigated. I don't know who would do that, but we don't need people like that who worry about themselves and not our students. Now, I did want to talk about a few other things, but we have less time, and we'll talk again. But I'm so glad, because I'm going to salute to that guy again. Hat off to you, young man. Every time I see him, I get happy. I'm like, you should be my son. But, you know, what do you do? I can only have so many sons. Thank you, Chief. Thank you, Chair. Appreciate it, sir.
Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. Before I call on Regent Brown, I want to say thank you for providing the clarification to beat me to the microphone. However, Regent Brown, please, you're up.
Thank you so much, Chair. Regent Brown, for the record, first of all, I just want to acknowledge we have actually only had you in this position for 7 months, give or take. Right. And I just want to acknowledge that you have done such an incredible job. I have personally spoken to so many officers in Southern Command, and they have just sang your praises. The culture is something that they really want to highlight, and so I think that's important for us to talk about. We talk a lot about your presence on campus and how that's felt, and that can only translate if the culture is right and if there's people within the department that feel that support. So I think it's important to acknowledge that.
Thank you very much.
With that acknowledgement, we have to acknowledge your new title. Congratulations. This is exciting. We got that news, I think, on Monday. I think it was public Monday?
Yeah, I think it was Monday. Thank you.
I was a little behind on my email, but I did get it on Monday. So I'm in my head, it's Monday. So just congratulations. It's well-deserved. Like I said, in just 7 months, we have seen just a drastic difference. And so just really want to make sure that that is felt. Going back to that, I want to share a quick story. I just took two of my friend's kids to a basketball game pretty recently, and I always try and go up and say hi to your officers, and I brought them with me, and they immediately pulled out their stickers, and they gave them to them, and they both took them to show and tell later that week. So it is just a sticker, but it was a gesture that meant a lot, and it felt really cool. And so everything from your examples in your slideshow where you're attending career fairs, take your kids to school, and just literally saying hi to a 5- and 7-year-old, like, it does matter. And so you kind of touched on the hiring of, you know, because we had approved that at a previous meeting. Sure. So I feel good about that. But I did want to just touch on grants. Okay. I think everybody is having this question about grants and money and whether it's federal funding and what's happening. Is there any type of disruption? Do we need to worry about that? So I was curious if you could, I know you said one of the grants came from ENCHI, mm-hmm. but what are the other ways that you guys find grants, look for grants, and then do we have any, are you worried about any of the pending grants?
Understood. Arnold Vasquez, for the record, thank you. Regent Brown, for that question. So, yes, the grants is a complicated project, if you will. That was the reason why since I've stepped into this role, I realized that we need to have somebody that we can have fully dedicated to grant management, grant writing, and coordination. Up until this point, it was really a collateral assignment in the writing aspect of it. And if anybody's familiar with writing grants, it's pretty extensive and it's a really, really heavy lift. And so when you have your time divided and attention divided on that, sometimes that doesn't quite pan out in our favor. What we did previously, and I believe we're at the end of that particular contract, is we did contract with a company, a vendor called Lexipol. I think you may or may not be familiar with it. They assisted us with researching grants that might fit our needs after, you know, we would have monthly meetings with them to discuss this. And then they would help us with the crafting and putting that particular grant together and the writing aspect of it. as a part of that contract, they would also draft or author and submit grants, at least two of them per calendar year. Some of the grants that we pursued over the last year were the LEMWA grant, which is the Law Enforcement Health and Wellness grant. We went for it twice, and we were denied twice. I was pretty bothered by that, especially after the events of 12/6/2023. I thought that we'd have a really good shot at that. But in terms of the grant piece of it, we have identified that position, which I think we need to dedicate some solid resources to. And in addition, we currently have a few different grants. As I mentioned, ones here. We also have other equipment or asset-based grants, much more easier to manage. At this point, I don't have any concerns or issues as related to that. I just see that we're going to be exploring many more of them in the future.
Thank you. That's exciting. I have personally received two federal grants for a nonprofit that I started, and it is literally a full-time job just to manage those. And so I'm glad that there's going to be some dedicated time, and then obviously they can scale that. So that's exciting. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Are there additional questions from committee members? From Henderson? Chief Askew, I do have a question.
Okay.
On page 4, let me go back a bit. During public comment, there was a statement made in regards to trespassing. And on page 4 of the crime statistics, when I look down at trespassing, that it has inched up a little bit, regardless if it's gone up or down, there has been trespassing on campus. What sort of pathway are you doing to limit or prevent or slow down the amount of foot on traffic going through our campuses?
Thank you, Chair Arriscada. Arnold Vasquez for the record. That's a great question, and that is exactly the reason why we implemented and created this COPS unit. My hope and my vision for that team is to look at these problems and take a deeper dive in how we're going to solve them. What I noticed early on was a tremendous high level of recidivism on those particular crimes. So in essence, the same offenders were offending over and over and over, and there was nothing behind that to address that problem at a deeper level. So what this team has already begun to engage in is discussions with the institutions in relation to possible policy changes, some signage that will help us to get those convictions in court. They have also been collaborating with the district attorney's office to determine if there's holes or gaps in our investigation and or requirements to solidify those convictions. And on the back end of those convictions for trespass, is there a way that we can actually create a footprint that would, in essence, not allow them to be in a certain footprint within our institutions? So those are some conversations that we have begun to explore and some actions that we've already taken. As you mentioned, the stats did climb, but I attribute that, and I can't attribute all of it to it, but it's really just that proactivity as well. One of the things that I've made clear to my staff is that, you know, I don't want us to get in the habit of issuing a third and a fourth warning. I want us to act. I want us to be able to send a message that this is not going to be tolerated on our campus, on our campuses. And so just that level of kind of being more proactive and engaged with that.
Chair, do you mind if I ask?
Thank you for the response.
Do you mind if I ask a clarifying question to your question? About the
trespassing. Please, Regent Brown.
I'm sorry for interrupting. Regent Brown, for the record. Chair Arriscada, you mentioned that you were referencing the public comment today about the bathrooms, and then, but can I get a clarification? Because I don't think, and that's not to diminish the people not feeling safe and early morning access to these things, but somebody using a public restroom, that's not considered trespassing, right? These trespassing incidents is a different thing. They're not actually the same.
That's correct. Yes, Arnold Vasquez for the record. Yes, that's correct. It's a very interesting, nuanced piece that we have to work through on an open campus, a public campus. So, that's why I think over the course of the last few years, it's kind of been a little bit gray, but we've been working with much closer with the district attorney's office and new municipal codes in the county that are going to give us some of those tools to help deal with that issue.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure I understood that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chief Vasquez.
Regent Goykoechea. Yes. And we don't want to start down this pathway, but I do need to ask. And, you know, we're talking about, all right, trespass, and, you know, we're just soft-hewing around this. But the bottom line is, in your case, now, ultimately, you have to turn that over to Metro if you are, in fact, going to cite, and they would. It's up to them. And, you know, will they pursue it? And if they don't, you're right back in the same scenario, right? I mean, you're going to issue a citation for trespass, but ultimately, if there is any further action, it goes to Clark County and Metro.
Arnold Vasquez for the record. Yes, thank you, Regent Goykoechea, for the question. Yes, the judicial system, there's a few different court systems that manage that, and then it does go over to the county primarily. So, yes, you know, but I think the key really is having that relationship and that understanding with the district attorney's office, and we have actually opened up some very positive lines of communication on that piece. Because they, too, have also seen the impact of that particular issue on our campuses. And quite honestly, many of them have, you know, students of their own that are attending our campuses. So, yes.
Thank you.
Chair Scott, just one remark, please, sir.
Regent Boylan, please.
Thank you, sir. In defense of what the police are doing there, I'm sure you might not know this, but that area is a transient homeless camp, and I feel for people. But that whole area, and especially the Las Vegas Library, just one block east of us at UNLV, is just a huge, unbelievable camp there. So trying to stop something, or even we can lessen it, I'm sure, but it'll just keep going on. And this is in defense of what Chief and his people do. It's just unbelievable, that area. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Regent Boyle. Chief Vasquez, well done. Appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's move over to agenda number 5, which is going to be the Northern Command. Chief Eric James from Northern Command will present on Northern Command's 2024 annual activity report. And Chief James, and there he is. Chief James, please, mic is yours.
Good morning. Let me get set up here, I apologize. my name is Eric James. I'm the University Police Chief of Northern Nevada. I'm here today to go over our updates for the year of 2024. I assume this is my clicker for today. That did not work. Okay, there we go. So before I get started, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't at least inform you all of where Northern Nevada is on some of those safety issues, because that necessarily isn't in there. So I just want to let you know, University of Nevada, Reno, we did a $1.3 million video camera upgrade that finished about 6 months ago that retrofitted all of our cameras. We have 144 classrooms with active shooter locks on them. They are not digital locks. They are mechanical locks. And then we also have the Boo phone cameras all over, or the blue phone lights. And then any new building that's being built has perimeter security and cameras that automatically go into it. Over at TMCC, we worked with our grant writer, Hanin, who is amazing. She got us a grant for TMCC to get external locks all throughout the Red Mountain building. And I know that Mike Pearl and his team are working hard to get active shooter locks for all their classrooms as well. WNC, we got a grant for them. We put new external locks on all their exterior as well as some of their interior. And then they just put up all their a couple of those blue phone poles as well. And GBC is currently, we're working to get a grant for them to do the exact same thing out there as well. And so we're trying to get everyone to the same place as the best that we can. And a lot of it is using grant money, which is amazing for us to use. So that being said, and DRI, I haven't forgot about DRI. Dr. Amanda Wins just got her team ordered and got a whole bunch of new medical kits. I have two of them in my car, so I need to get with Dr. Acharya and make sure we get those into, because I don't want to take them back to Reno because I drove. So our statistics. So all of 2024, we had 122 arrests, and we only had 11 or 12 uses of force, which I'm very happy about. We had a total of 30,000 citizen contacts. We had about 5,000 computer-animated dispatch incidents and 5,421 total foot patrol hours for all over Northern Nevada. So that's all the campuses combined. Our partnerships, we're participating in the Northern Nevada Diversity Summit. We have internships now. Madison Effort is fantastic at internships. So we work with the UNR Division of Social Work. So we have a social worker who comes in with us, a student who goes out with us. We're part of the PAC Internship Grant Program, the TMCC Career Hub Intern Program. And then UNR's Path to Independence Partnership through their College of Education to assist those to get a little bit more experience not only in the real world, but I think really focusing on policing as well. Obviously, we coordinate with athletics for all athletic events on campus. It was an election year, and so there were quite a few gatherings all over all of our campuses, and I can say that we had very, very minimal incidents the entire time, which is great. And also, we participate in TMCC Spirit Day. Brian Berry is an amazing officer who will tell you a dad joke every time he sees you, and he spends all – yeah, you know what I'm talking about – and he spends all of his time on foot on campus. He's just an amazing individual, along with Fran and everyone up there. Our department updates, though, we did swear in two lateral officers, which is fantastic, Officer Brasenio and Officer Viglietta. We logged more than 1,375 training hours. That was mandatory, elective, and specialized for the entire department. We are a member, much like Southern Command, of Joining Forces, where we had 227 educational opportunities. We had 156 citations, 60 warnings. Those campaigns focus on speed, pedestrian safety, seatbelt enforcement. Office of Traffic Safety Summit, our department was recognized for partnering with Joining Forces for 20 years. And I'm very happy to say that Officer Michael Thompson received two awards for his work in Joining Forces, one for outstanding officer from our department and the other for the excellent in speed enforcement. He wrote over 720 tickets in that year, one of our motor officers, and he's just a phenomenal individual. Matter of fact, he also won the 2024 Sergeant George Sullivan Employee of the Year Award, which I was very happy to see. He's an amazing individual who does a lot for us. Our front office staff of Janine, Angela, and Tara successfully completed the FBI fingerprint audit, which is no small task. It is a very daunting undertaking, and they did a great job. We're currently working with the entire county. All of Washoe County is going to be on the same program now to write reports, computer animated data, all that sort of thing. It's a huge lift, and Tara Cohen has been really spearheading that. And it's supposed to be rolled out September 7th, and you all know how rolling out things go. So September 7th of this year may turn into December, may turn into February. We've got to wait and see. I am happy to announce that Officer Pinion is our lead drone operator. We have four pilots, four observers. We have FAA approval. And we have two drones. One very high speed, one a little bit lower speed, but we carry those in our cars to use only on active calls for service. So if anyone thinks we're flying in around looking at people, it's not. It's only for active calls for service. We also working with the Ridge Department out in Tennessee, the DOA personnel radiation detectors. So a number of our officers at even different locations carry radiation detectors on them in case there's a spike in radiation, especially at the university, knowing that we have an irradiator there on campus. And then our 2024 JAG UNR non-lethal taser program. Once again, Hanine, she got us 13 new tasers. That doesn't even go into the body cameras and everything else that she's gotten for us over the years through our grant writing program. Our human exploitation and recovery team, that's Detective Seifert. I'm just going to kind of hit the high-level highlights. Victims contacted, 325. If I had 80 personnel to work on this full-time, they would remain busy 24/7, 365. That is how pervasive it is. Victims disclosures, 427, and they recovered 26. Operations, they had recovered 17 adults, one child. They had some lead to felony arrests. They had misdemeanor arrests, felony arrests. They've been asked to speak at a number of different areas. They assisted Kansas City with a two-night operation, multiple arrests. One recovered adult went missing as a juvenile, so that individual was recovered after years of being a juvenile. And then one, we got a conviction of 8.5 years to life. And without getting into too much detail, we also had one we picked up last week that there was an agency that was in process of hiring them. They will not be doing that anymore. So that's the good work that she does, well, the whole team does. Victim Services, this is Daley Gibson. As you can see, there's Aspen. She came down to Southern Command and met with Southern Command just to say hi. She had 54 incidents. Cases involving ENSHI was 40. We do a lot of outside jurisdictional work as well because they are our students. Whether they live on campus or not doesn't matter. We have 10 ongoing. I'm sure that's low. Actually, it's probably more than that. Our major crime, though, for her to deal with is stalking. That is the one thing, because you can stalk anyone, anytime, anywhere with some sort of cellular device. Crisis interventions, she had 12 contacts, all non-criminal, focused on suicide, concerns about others, and then crisis check-ins. And so she is very active in the community. Our outreach initiatives, we had 127 trainings for Northern Nevada. Overwhelming majority of those are all workplace violence, active shooter presentations. But some of the organizations we did was the Girl Scouts of America, Milan Institute, the UNRFSL, Volunteers of America, Res Life. We continue to do our women's self-defense classes, Coffee with a Cop at multiple occasions, safety sessions every month at WNC, where Madison goes down and teaches. The two-day active assailant training, that was with our fire department and law enforcement personnel, and TMCC was gracious enough to loan us a building so we could do a three-day large-scale exercise, which was just an amazing event for everyone to get together and work together. We received the Community Partner of the Year through the Donor Network. And our sergeants, Sergeant Stewart and Sergeant Olson, taught 17 community basic motorcycle rider classes. This means they travel to Elko, they travel to Winnemucca, they travel up, they travel down, they travel everywhere to put these on. You show up, it's a two-day class, they put you through the rigors on a little 250, and then you get a motorcycle license at the end. And so they have been really active out there doing that. And it's a phenomenal class because we're putting one on for our department. I'm going to have to do two because it was so popular. And my son's going to go through. So I trust them with my son. And then our Bigs with Badges partnership, we continue to have mentors for those who need help within the community. I have my little, his name's Vinny. He's 8 years old. He's an amazing young man. He just needs some direction. We spend 3 to 4 hours every week together. And he's a handful, but he's a good kid and I love him. And then I sit on the board of the directors as well for Big Brothers and Big Sisters. Organizational highlights. This is Dr. Amanda Wins. She had an official title change to University Organizational Resilience Northern Command to better reflect it. I'm sure some of you read about and or saw the Davis Fire. They were absolutely instrumental in helping with that. The communication between TMCC and UNR and ensuring that they knew their campuses, their satellite campuses down there, would have the ability to either open or close. It worked flawlessly. We would like to give a big shout-out, though, to Bo Kindred and Jason Doomfrey from the main station for their outstanding service and support of the federal incident. We probably could not have set up operations without them. What did that mean? That means that we had to escort a humongous piece of agriculture, a tractor, to a large field, plow the entire field down to allow federal assets to come in, as you can see in that bottom picture. They did that in a moment's notice, and without that, that fire probably could have been worse. So kudos to them. CAPS Partnerships, the created earthquake template, planned and executed the first ENSHI-wide exercise as part of the Great Shakeout. I do have to give the chancellor and her team a shout-out because they helped us coordinate this whole thing, and it was fantastic. Thank you for that. Worked extensively with response agencies, dispatches to create unique addresses for every UNR and GBC building. And we're working DRI, TMCC, and WNC do the exact same thing. So when the building comes out with an alarm, it knows exactly which building. It's not a generic address or code. They do an amazing class called Prepared, Not Scared. If you ever get an opportunity to take it, I would. It's a three-hour class, but it is phenomenal. Created an emergency action template for child care centers and northern institutions. Conducted a fall tabletop exercise to focus on threat procedures, checklists, protests, and transition to criminal activities. Received funding for placement of trauma kits in all UNR and TMCC buildings, making Stop the Bleed equipment available in all Northern Nevada institutions. These aren't just go to the store, buy a kit that has Band-Aids in them. These are robust tourniquet, Israeli bandages, gauze, all that stuff that she and everyone in Northern Nevada now has for TMCC and UNR, which is incredible. In collaboration with the Northern Nevada Public Health, we pre-positioned 5 60-person trauma kits at campus at UNR and TMCC. These are for any type of large-scale event that may occur, not necessarily at campus, but anywhere, that we now have 50 pre-positioned, kind of like ships floating around the world where there's supply ships ready to go. We already have these ready to go to help individuals in the time of support that they need. And then they helped with the Reno balloon races as well. They love getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to go help. Organization releases, highlights continued, certifications and workshops attended. Participated in the Nevada State Threat Assessment or Threat Hazard Identification Risk Report. This is not my realm, just so you know. I don't live in this realm. There's a lot of big words in this screen. I'm sorry. They attended International Association of Emergency Managers, Universities, College Caucus in Colorado Springs. Dr. Amanda Wins, recertified as the International Association of Emergency Managers, Certified Emergency Manager, plus Dr. Amanda Wins and Matt Williams, recertified as Nevada Certified Emergency Managers, all the highest level of professional certification available. And there are only three in the state, and we got two of them. That is my presentation. Can I answer any questions? Seeing none, you all have an amazing day.
Get back here. All right. Chair.
Thank you, Chief Chain. And it sounds like Regent Boylan is up. Regent Boylan, please.
Thank you, Chair. Before he runs away, it's great what you guys are doing, and especially your emergency managers. You've got two of them. On one of your slides, you show that there were 427 trafficked people and 26 were retrieved. Now, how do you know there were 427 if you don't know what you don't know? And was the 26 retrieved by our Northern Command? Wow, that's impressive.
ERG is correct. Those are individuals we came in contact with that were trafficked, and then we recovered 26 of those. Yes.
Awesome. That's awesome. But how would you know that there were 427 trafficked? Because we don't know that.
Because we contacted those 427 people. Actually made physical contact with them.
I see.
And 26 said, I'm going to go with you. The others did not.
Outstanding. All right. That makes sense. Thank you so much, sir.
Yes, sir.
As always, good job. Thank you, Chair.
Great clarity. Thank you, Chief James. Are there any other questions from the committee members?
Chair Scott, I would love to.
Please go ahead, Regent Brown.
Regent Brown, for the record. I have less of a question, more of just wanted to make sure that I also shared, being on our campuses in the north, it's similar to what I said about Southern Command. Your presence is definitely a positive influence on campus, that you have a great culture. I had an opportunity to meet so many of your officers, and just everyone feels a sense of camaraderie and really one band, one sound, really out there for the community. I love what you gave me a pin, and even just your patches, you're here as a community resource. And so I've really enjoyed your presentations over the last 2 years of me being a regent about how it is community forward, right? You guys are there. You are making sure that you're interacting. You're not just there on the bad days. You're there on the good days. And so I think it's important that you've created a culture that has also kind of emanated that throughout your command, and I wanted to highlight that. I just kept writing down coffee and donuts because clearly there's a theme here between you and Chief Vasquez. We get it. We'll bring you some more donuts.
I don't need donuts, so that's fine. Thank you. I'm just kidding. I do.
But I really liked that you highlighted, even though you have a large area, you are in the community. You're there for the balloon races. You were there for the fire. When things happen in the community, you're so embedded that it's just a natural thing. And so I've also spoken with students that kind of feel the same way. So I just really wanted to highlight that. You already touched on the grants. I don't know if you have any worry about, the federal piece. I had asked Southern Command that. I don't know if you have you have a different take on it, or if you feel really good about the grants that you guys are going after, that they have viability in the long run.
Eric James, the record, we feel good about it. There was that initial shutdown of grants, and then they kind of opened the stuff back up that affected us directly, yes.
Okay, good. And then I wrote down the great shakeout training, so I would like to know about that. That sounds cool.
Eric James, for the record, every year in October, they pick a day, and that day at that time, all of us test our emergency alert systems, as well as communications go out across the board. So Elizabeth Menchie was just so great. She figured it all out. She put it all together. She pushed it all out. They were the lead points of contact for any media requests that come out. But it's a national thing, but the real focus on Nevada here. And so you go into their website and you log in how many people, and then they keep track of all of that. But really for us, it's an opportunity to go, did this work? Is there a hole? How do we correct that? That sort of that discrepancy.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I just wanted to acknowledge that I haven't forgotten about the public comments that were
earlier. There's clearly gaps across our system, 8 institutions. There's clearly things that we can be doing. But I genuinely believe, and I want this for the record, that we have two chiefs. Thank you. We have two chiefs that are really, you guys are really making a difference in all of the ways that you've acknowledged and you're sharing with us. And having spoken with both of you, I know that there's an openness. And I think this is an opportunity for ENCHI, the system, to ask the presidents to, and we have, but just reiterate this, work with our chiefs and try and fill these gaps. If it's going to the legislature and asking for the money, if it's going after additional grants, if it's speaking with faculty senate, if it's speaking with our students, and it's just making sure that we are acknowledging these gaps wherever they are across the board, and that the students and faculty feel like they're being heard, because I do appreciate when they come here, but I also know that our two chiefs are listening as well, and I just think that's really important for the record. And I hope, you know, as we fill all these positions that we have in ENCHI, that we can really start anew and really just build upon these relationships that you guys already have. Please.
Eric James, the record. I'd just like to say, and I know working with Chief Vasquez down south, he feels the same way, that all of our presidents at all of our institutions are not only listening, but they're engaged. They're asking questions. We're responding the best we can. And there's never a day that goes by that someone doesn't ask a question. And I think for us, that open line of communication is the best thing that we have. And they do everything they can to ensure the students, faculty, and staff on their campuses are safe every single day.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Here's your opportunity. Get off that mic.
I'm out.
There we go. Thank you, Chief. Wonderful. Wonderful questions from the committee. Thank you all. We're going to move on to agenda item number 6, ENCHI Cybersecurity. And ENCHI Cybersecurity today is by Thomas Dobert, of Chief Information Security Officer for SES, System Computer Services. Thank you very much, Mr. Dobert. Glad you're at the mic. Please continue.
Yes. For the record, my name is Thomas Dauber, Chief Information Security Officer, and thank you to the committee and the guests that are watching for allowing me to give some updates. I would like to start, if I figured this out. That was the wrong button. It's not moving forward. Oh, it's the big button, the biggest one. Okay, I got it. Thanks. So I would like to give you some updates on current projects that we are working and also on future projects and what to expect from my perspective right now here in March for 2025. And let me start with the National Institute for Science and Technology Cybersecurity Framework. In 2016 or 17, ENCHI adopted the NIST framework, and every 2 years all the institutions are getting together, and we are evaluating our what's called the current profile and the future profile. Obviously, the future profile is where we want to be, and this year is the year where we are putting this working group together again, and we will start our work in June, and that helps us to be ready for audits, for cyber liability insurance and things like that, and it also shows us where we are standing as far as our security posture goes. I mentioned multi-factor authentication and SMS messages last time already, and we are in the process of phasing out SMS because it is just not a safe environment anymore. And we ask people that they actually install an app on their phone because that's much more difficult to steal the SMS or the for multi-factor authentication to bypass that. And I do want to give kudos to UNLV because UNLV already moved completely away from SMS and has put all their faculty, staff, and students on the app, and I can only imagine what it takes to convince faculty and staff to put an app on their personal cell phone for work. So kudos to that. Cybersecurity training is something that's definitely important. We all feel like that. But we noticed that there's really nothing in the Board of Regents handbook that says that people actually have to do it. So we are in the process of rewriting portions of the Board of Regents handbook, and we will present on that to make it mandatory. And the same is also true for the artificial intelligence policy. So we had several discussions on that with all the CIOs, all the CISOs, and we agreed that we don't necessarily have to have a policy in the Board of Regents handbook because essentially it is just a new technology. So what we're doing is we are elaborating on the wording in the policy and including current and future technologies, because I'm sure there will be something after AI, and we will find ourselves here again. And then we are leaving the actual policy piece up to the institution so they can actually write it to their own needs, right? So that's what we all agreed on, and I hope other people agree with this approach as well. All right, so where are we here on this one? Privacy is something of a right. We expect that there's a certain privacy right, and we want to take it a step further and actually evaluate our data input. Where does the data go? Where does it live? Who has access to it? Whom are we sharing it with? And then do we ever delete this kind of data? So this is one of our projects for our privacy officer. And the more we talk about it, the more we realize that this is a huge project because it also touches on record retention. And this is definitely a big thing that we need to address at some point. Like I said, it's a huge project, but we got to start it at some point because I'm a little concerned we might get GDPR or CCPA requests. So the GDPR is the General Data Protection Regulation from the European Union. So if we have European students, they might ask for being forgotten after they are done with their educational journey here. And the same is true for California students with the California Consumer Privacy Act. So I'd like to get in front of that card instead of struggling afterwards, right? High-risk vulnerabilities. So I am watching the Center for Internet Security very closely and share all that information. And they always put out high-risk or common risks. Some of them apply to us, some don't. But some of them that I'm worried about is the running end-of-life products or unsupported products. For example, you will not see a Windows XP computer on campus anymore because it's not supported and therefore it should not be on campus, right? Same is true for other software. Windows 95 is probably nowhere to be seen anymore. But I do want to point out that technology costs money. And with the current tariffs that are being discussed, we can expect that maybe our laptops and devices do go up in cost. So I dare to say that out loud. So the IT departments and financial departments probably have to consider that somehow. I have no numbers, so I can't give you any details, but it's just something that we have to consider. The remote desktop protocol is still an issue. We don't allow it. What it means is that somebody from their home computer can go through our firewall, go to their desktop PC and work from there. But apparently it is an issue for private industry still, so it is mentioned, but we don't allow it unless there are reasons for it and then has to be approved. Exposed databases, believe it or not, they are still out there. I don't know if you saw an article in Europe. There was a car company that collected data from all the cars, and this database was wide open to it for everybody to see. So people could see where the owner of this car was parked, how long the car was parked, how much charge was on the car, and things like that. So that didn't go over too well. We make sure that that doesn't happen in Engine, right? And then lastly, unpatched known vulnerabilities. It's almost like there's never a good time for updates, but we just have to do it. If we do know that there is an update out there, we have to deploy it because the bad guys know it as well. And we've probably all been in meetings. We start at 8 o'clock, and then suddenly our computer shuts down because there's an update. So, yeah, happens to all of us, but it's a necessary task. So, and all these things are, of course, being sent out to the institutions via the NGA Threat Bulletin. So everybody's informed on that. Last time I mentioned tabletop exercises. We feel a little bit like death by tabletop exercise. I don't know if anybody went through this. The last one we did was 4 hours long with 46 people on there, and we are not going to do this again. We purchased two micro tabletop exercises instead, and we want to focus on very, very specific things. And yesterday we had a meeting with all the CIOs and CISOs, and I think we came up with a few ideas. And we have to do it before June 30th, of course. So I will keep you informed on that. And lastly, an update on EduRoam. If you don't know what EduRoam stands for, education roaming, that means all the institutions that are members of EduRoam, which, by the way, all entry institutions are, if you go on that campus with your device, if it's configured correctly, you are automatically connecting to the internet via the institution's Wi-Fi. So this is a great thing for us because you are not able to connect to an untrusted network anymore because you're automatically connected. Just to name a few stats here, so Nevada currently has 100 locations with EduRoam. Libraries and museums can also join EduRoam now. This is new. And there are discussions with K-12 school systems, as well as the city of Las Vegas already has over 60 locations on EduRoam, and Clark County is currently in progress. So I think these are great things as far as security goes. So what do we expect in 2025? We are still early in the year, but we can already see that there is an increase in the phishing sophistication or the quality of the phishing emails that are coming through, and that's thanks to AI, because I can have AI write a perfectly fine English phishing email better than I can talk, and there are no grammar errors anymore, no misspelling, things like that. And it's also possible, since we have open meetings, that somebody could just upload whatever we are saying into an AI system and then ask that AI system to write an email in the tone of a certain person. And that works, actually, if you want to try that. Okay. Need for continual training on emerging threats. So this is deep to my personal heart here, because we have institutions that push out training on a monthly basis, which is, in my opinion, the best way of doing it, because you are able to put new threats in front of people so that they are aware of that, instead of doing it on a yearly basis. Again, this is up to the institution how they want to handle it, but the recommended frequency is once a month, very short trainings. We also see an increase in deepfake videos. There are actually systems out there called FaceSwap, for example. You can download it for free, and you take a model of an actor, for example, and use that model to put it on someone else's shoulders. And it works quite well, and it is a little concerning, because once that technology matures, you're on a Zoom meeting and you don't know whom you're actually talking to, right? So this is something we have to watch out in the future. Misinformation campaigns on social media. So nothing new there, but since some of the companies have removed fact-checking, it's more or less up to the end user to decide what is true and what is not true. So that's definitely something we have to deal with and teach our users what to look out for. Somehow there's a slide missing, but it doesn't matter. The last thing I want to mention is the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. So this is a federal agency that works on behalf of the state and local governments, and they are looking at network infrastructure security, and then they share their findings with us. And I follow them very closely, and we had a meeting on the 25th of February, and unfortunately they had to say that their funding for election verification was completely cut, so there will be no verification anymore in the future, and they hope that there will be no future cuts because that would actually reduce their services and redundancies. But so far they are positive and optimistic that they can provide or continue providing those kind of services. So personally, I hope that cooler heads will prevail in the long run, but we shall see. So that's actually all I have. So are there any questions?
So very well done. Thank you, Mr. Dover. Are there any questions for Chief Information Security Officer for SES, Mr. Dover?
Chair Regent Brown has a question.
Please, Chair Brown. Excuse me, Regent Brown.
I don't know. I like the sound of that. I'm just teasing. Regent Brown, for the record. So I really appreciated that you mentioned the training, the mandatory training. I'm assuming this goes back to the once a month thing that we discussed back at WNC last September.
Yes.
I'm happy to hear that there's progress. Do we have a timeline on when it's going to come to the board, or is it still TBD?
Are you talking about the cybersecurity training? Thomas Daubert, for the record.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. The cybersecurity training, the one that we talked about last September about wanting, it's not mandatory. We'd have to change stuff in our handbook.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So all the institutions are already engaging in training, but there are some people that are questioning, why do I have to do this? Where does it say that I have to do this? And that's why we are addressing it in the Board of Regents handbook. And then, like I said, I would like to see it on a monthly basis instead of a yearly basis, but that's kind of up to the institutions. How do you want to handle that?
Of course. I mean, and I think just to reiterate what we discussed at the last meeting, you know, doing it 5-8 minutes at a time, one, that's digestible, but two, that keeps it fresh in your mind.
Yes. Yes.
And that goes with anything, right? Like, what's the statistic? If you do something for 18 minutes every day, you're going to be better than 95% of the world.
Days, yeah.
And so if we break it down to just 5 to 8 minutes a month, at least it's fresh. And so right. I think I had said this last time, and I'll reiterate, I agree with you. I do think that we live in a very different world than when these policies were probably created in the 80s, 90s, 70s, right? Like, we're just in a completely different space. Yeah. And so I do agree, and I hope this does come to the board so we can have an open dialogue about it. I wanted to acknowledge, because just last month or the month before, when Ann came up and spoke to us about the AI note takers, now I've just been very visual about it when I'm on work calls, and she calls, and I'm triple checking that I know who that person is. And so just wanted to reiterate that for this, that AI note takers are also something that to be looking out for when you are in an NCHI meeting and stuff, whether on campus, between campuses. I wanted to highlight Edurome. So I'm currently running a pilot program for SES with Edurome on all my stuff. So everywhere I go, whether I'm in the Thomas and Mack Center, and yes, sometimes I do bring my laptop to a basketball game. It's just inevitable. It has to happen. But I connect right to the internet. I've been overseas and in a train station with Edurome, and it just connected right to it. So this is really valuable. I'm happy to see that this is expanding across Clark County. I think this is a value add for everyone involved in the higher ed system, students, faculty, regents. And I think this is just an easy way to offer seamless internet for our folks that's secure, right?
Right. Yes. Thomas Dauber for the record, so I'm happy to pass that on to the people that actually make it happen behind the scenes. So thank you for that.
Yeah. And then I wanted just to highlight again to bring back to what we discussed when WNC hosted us last fall. I was currently in Paris through a fake video voicemail that I had left someone. So for the record, they created a fake voicemail with my permission about I was in Paris, stranded, and just needed all my NCHI family to help me. And it was just, it sounded just like me, and I'm sure you're seeing, it was just to kind of highlight that these things are happening. For the record, I also offered to go to Paris to make that a little bit more realistic. They denied me, but that's okay. Are we seeing more of these examples that the institutions are turning in, whether they're, I know we get those text messages all the time about the toll roads and that's a scam. And then, you know, I know we're getting emails, but are we getting like actual voice memos across our campuses?
Yeah, Thomas Daubert, for the record, to my knowledge, we have not seen that yet. But what we are seeing increasingly is that people try to log into Workday to reroute the paycheck to a different bank account. So that's definitely something we have to watch out very closely.
Okay. Well, that's super important to know. Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair Escada.
Thank you, Regent Brapp. Are there any other questions on the dais? None. Mr. Daubert, well done. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Those three, the agenda items 4, 5, and 6, were all for information only. However, we're going to be going up to agenda item number 7, which is for possible action. And this is the Public Safety Council from Interim Chancellor Charlton, who will request approval for revision of board policy. Chancellor, please.
Okay, thank you so much, Chair Arizcata and members of the committee. Today I bring forward to you a recommendation for a handbook revision. This is consistent with the conversations that we have had really since January of 2024, when in my capacity I established the Chancellor's Ad Hoc Public Safety Council. So that Public Safety Council was represented, or the membership of the Chancellor's Ad Hoc Public Safety Committee included representation from each of the campuses. It included representation from each of our stakeholder groups, and it actually included one of the regions on that committee, as well as external representatives. And so today I bring forward to you a request for the handbook revision to establish the Public Safety Council that would report or provide recommendations through the Chancellor's office to this committee regarding critical areas related to public safety, including evaluation of safety issues for all of our INSHE institutions, seeking funding, as we have talked about, for continuing safety improvements, and to ensure also consistent safety training, developing it, recommending it, and maintaining those safety protocols across all of our INSHE institutions. And then also, it would also address any other items that this committee would like to see researched and data points provided. It is also my recommendation that this council, which was unanimously supported by that committee and our institutions, be co-chaired by the two chiefs of our university police services, which you heard from earlier today. I think we have wonderful expertise, but they would co-chair that committee, and it would support recommendations on behalf of all of our institutions and our system as a whole through the chancellor to this committee. And with that, I would be ready to answer any questions, and the two chiefs are also here as well, should there be any questions.
Thank you, Chancellor. Are there any questions from the table?
Yes, sir. Chair Scott.
Regent Boylan.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chancellor. Wow, that sounds like Madam Secretary. Okay. You mentioned there is a regent on that committee, and that was a regent who's left.
That's yes. Correct. Okay. Yes, that was a former regent who formerly chaired this committee.
You're right.
Yes. And
I'm not interested, no. But why have you not appointed another regent on that board, to that committee?
So the committee last met around the end of the calendar year, and so we knew that we were bringing forward this recommendation for the council, and so we wanted to have that brought forward, and so we could certainly we'll be looking at the membership of the council as we move forward. But it was just a timing issue, as the work of that that committee did some work, and it'll be moving forward with obviously this agenda item and to make this a more formal council.
Interesting. Now, I've talked to you about this direct reports, and I think the chief in the South should report to you directly, not to six different presidents of different institutions. So is that a board thing to be done, or is that up to you, is how it works? Are you the one in charge to make that decision, is what I mean.
And sir, Jimmy Martinez, for the record, I just want to point out the discussion about future appointments and who that person reports to, that would be a change in policy that's not agendized. So I don't want to get too far into that conversation about who the director in the South should report to.
Okay, good. That, I'm glad you said that. That was just a question, really. And it's about safety and security. So I think it's very valid that we know who's answering to who in our safety and security.
Certainly, and just to make sure for the record, Patty Charlton, and I do believe that there is an outstanding new business item related to this, and so we will certainly bring that back as part of this process. That was before my time, but we will certainly take this up as part of that process. So there was a new business item brought forward to the board some time ago regarding the reporting structure. So we will certainly engage with the presidents and the council in that regard and bring forward a recommendation to this body.
The sooner the better. That's something that's very important, because we've seen people come and go now, and we need to know the exact line, you know, who's the direct reports and who. All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Certainly.
Thanks, Council. Thank you, Chair. I'm done.
Thank you much. Thank you. Any other questions, comments for the dais?
Chair Escada, do you mind?
Excellent.
I'm so sorry.
Please.
Sorry. Regent Brown, for the record. I don't have a question. I just wanted to commend the fact that we put a committee together, executed, and now we're bringing it forward. So I just wanted to acknowledge the hard work that does go behind the scenes to get it to this board. So thank you.
Thanks.
As agenda item number 7 is for possible action, I'm asking if there's a motion on the table for approval of the revision to board policy, Title 4, Chapter 1 of new Section 13, establishing a public safety council to review, evaluate, and make recommendations to the chancellor to address the safety and security of all NSHE institutions. Is there a motion on the table?
Move to approve.
Thank you, Regent Brown.
I'll second it.
Regent Boland, appreciate it. Motion for approval, motion seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Wonderful. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chancellor.
Thank you, Regent Ayer-Scott. If I could, and for the committee, I would just really like to thank all of the members of that ad hoc committee. They really put their blood, sweat, and tears into this process, and also just all the leadership across the state and from the institutions in support of what they think is, and we all know, is a number one priority, and that's the safety of all of our faculty, staff, students, and the community. So thank you.
Thank you, Chancellor. We're going to transition over to agenda item number 8 for new business. Is there a public comment from GBC?
There is none at this time.
We need to ask for new business
Thank you.
Items. Chair Scott, you need to ask for new business items first. Sorry.
Thank you, Regent Brown. That was my apologies to the entire committee and those in the audience. Let's transition to agenda item number 8, new business. These items are going to be for consideration for future meetings and maybe suggested. Are there any new business items coming from the committee? And I do have one. And this is, as I mentioned in my chair's report, to monitor campus safety issues and receive quarterly updates from all institutions on campus crime statistics. And look forward to those on a quarterly basis. Thank you, Regent Brown, for identifying the new business, which is necessary. Let's move over to agenda item number 9, public comment. Is there public comment from GBC?
There is none at this time.
Is there public comment from the System Administration Office here in Reno? None seen. Is there public comment from the Nevada State University?
Hello? Yeah. Doug Unger, professor at UNLV and chapter president, Nevada Faculty Alliance. I just want to thank this board for approving the Safety and Security Council, and I would like to thank Chancellor Charlton for putting it all together and for keeping us all going during what has been, you know, a kind of difficult time with changes back and forth. And one thing I do want to say is the nature of bureaucracy is to move very slowly. And I hope, really, it's, I was told early on in my faculty career that if you want to make a change in higher education, that it's going to take 2 years before it's implemented. We're now 15 months after December 6th. This council is long overdue, but I hope the board can put together some procedures where if there are urgent recommendations from this Safety and Security Council, that the board can act very quickly on them and not see delays in campus safety and security. But thank you all, and thank you for the Chancellor for her leadership on this. Thank you.
President Osorio Hernandez, for the record. I just want to be very thankful. I know last year the Nevada Student Alliance passed a resolution regarding the safety structure of our system. And so I want to just be thankful to our chancellor and to this board for being responsive to the Nevada Student Alliance resolution that was passed last year. Thank you.
Thank you. As I do not see any more public comment, SCS, is there a public comment on the phone?
Yes, Mr. Chair, there's one. Caller with the phone number ending in 5015, please press *6 to unmute. State and spell your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes to address the Security Committee. They're not unmuting at this time. That's all we have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, SCS. As though the public comment is in recognition, this meeting is adjourned at 11:13. All adjourned.